Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Going Downhill. This is Wendy.
And I'm Shelley.
Hey Shelley, how are ya?
I'm good.
Okay,
good.
Moving on.
Yeah. We're both busy people, so it's been good. I mean, lots of interesting things going on, prepping to maybe head out east for that World Cup if we can.
The temperature been like out there? Is there enough like to make snow?
I mean, for Tremblant, yeah, but I mean, Tremblant and here, as you know, are very different temperatures.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here it's like hovering around 0 to -2 at night, +5 during the day. It's, you know, it's chilly.
So, yes. I'm sure they'll be prepped and ready to go.
Yeah, it's not your shorts and t-shirt weather, but don't worry. I'm sure you'll still have your eye makeup on.
Is there still any left?
Yes.
Can you see?
Yes.
I think it's less than last time.
Yeah, well, we're not going to go on in such a tangent about that, but I do have...
Right, no, we won't.
I do have something to play for you, though. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you going to play it for me now, or...?
Yeah, sure. I could just do a little audio clip. Here we go.
Sure. That'd be fantastic, because that's what our show is all about.
Yeah.
Not talking about World Cup ski racing.
Take off your eye makeup, or your eyes are going to get all gooey and gross.
Out of the mouths of babes.
Oh, yep.
Well, since she recommended it, I will give an attempt.
There you go. When you're getting lectured by a 12-year-old, you know that
that's
you have
right.
problems.
After the podcast is over, I'll go give it a go if there's any left.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks
I think
for
you
that.
Should. No sharing. Problem. So anyway, so today we're talking about races that didn't happen again and that happened.
That's right. They closer, though, for the ladies in Zermatt. They did get closer. They actually got an inspection in this time.
They got a training run in.
They did a few days ago, yeah.
Yeah.
They only did one training run to start.
So I spoke to a few people, and they had the same opinion of the course, because I was always wondering what the actual course was like. And they said that for the first run of the season, it was actually pretty easy. It was an easy course, but they said the jumps were big. They said that they were flying about 30 meters, and they weren't even going like full gas.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they were getting a lot of height. So the jumps were big, but they said that it was pretty cruisy course.
Yeah.
So I'm sad that we didn't get to see that. But check out last week's episode if you want to hear about wind and Zermatt stories.
Well, the wind didn't go away, but it was a little bit less, but still not enough safety-wise for the girls to go out there. And it's really too bad, because that's the first cross-border World Cup ever in history. Right?
Ah, no. For the men it is. For the women it isn't. They lower the start, so they start in Italy. So they're all in Italy. And where the men stay, in Zermatt for the races, and the women stay in Cervinia.
Oh, okay. Well, I like Italy. So, well, there goes that fact out the door. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
So we'll have to wait to see our Canadian Stephanie Fleckenstein to have her first downhill of the season then.
Yeah, so we have to make a little bit of an addendum to last week's episode. We did make a mistake, and we do admit our mistakes here. We were thinking about that Yurki was the last one to be independently funded, and that we hadn't really had a speed team, but that's not true, because Mitch Gagnon ran last year, but now it's an independently funded team again. So we do have someone from Canada Racing, but it's self-funded, not the best scenario to be in sometimes, but also gives you a little more freedom, I guess. I don't know what her deal is with the Canadian team. I have no idea. Do you?
I have no idea. I just know that self-funding for these events is going to cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So if any corporate sponsors out there want to give it a go for our lone speed queen, then that would be great. I'm sure they'd appreciate the support.
Yeah, it takes a lot of grit and a lot of planning and a lot of faith. And the coaches and the athletes have to have faith in each other, because it's, you know, you're on that journey together and you're working in with a lot of other teams. It's pretty difficult. You learn how much lift passes are. You learn how much lane space is, all these things that otherwise the government agencies would handle. You are on your own for.
Yeah, that's right.
So
hopefully she can slug it out and get all those races under her belt this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, unfortunate for the women. Wanted to get to see some speed skiers go, but for once, the men had a little bit of luck, and they had one race.
Well, did you know this is their fourth attempt? their fourth attempt to get the World Cups started. It's like the first races in October in Solden were canceled due to strong winds.
Yes.
Crazy out there. The GS race got started, and then they got 47 out of the 73 racers down. However, the conditions didn't allow the race to continue, and so that race got canceled as well.
Yeah,
and
so
then, of course, Zermatt.
So I think it's about time that the men got a little bit of a break.
Yeah, well, they did with their one slalom race.
Yeah, they did. So,
Did you know that last season, 5 out of the first 6 men's World Cup races had to be, they were canceled or rescheduled due to the weather?
I mean, it is kind of the way of ski racing. And I don't know, Mother Nature, you can't really argue with her. And we've been there.
No, you really can't. It could be beautiful one weekend and then not so beautiful the next.
And we have had those times where it's been a couple races in a row have been canceled, and it's unfortunate because you're moving from place to place. It's a lot of resources. It's very expensive. And then you don't even get to show, and the athletes get a little demoralized, but they're also not on snow either. So they're not in the same mental zone as well. It's disappointing for sure for everybody, and even sponsors and so on and so forth. And the people putting on, like, all the volunteers that put on those races.
Oh, yeah. the hours, which I never appreciated until I was not a racer anymore, and then became a coach and a volunteer. And the hours put in, my gosh. Yeah, amazing.
Injecting the snow, making sure the surface is good, like just even the snow control, the fist guys that go out there beforehand, all the, you know, these events happen, you know, the year prior to these things, like even all the hotels, getting everybody ready, so on and so forth, like just all the fans who show up and then just drink their faces off, and then you have to, you know, clean them up afterwards because they're disappointed.
So we were happy to get this race going in Austria in Gurgel. That sounded good to me.
Gurgel. I don't know. Yeah, I'm gonna pretend that there's an Austrian accent in there somewhere. So the course's name is Kirchenkar. I'm not really sure. We're gonna pretend that I can speak German. It starts off at a high 2475 meters and dips down to 2265 meters, giving it a vertical drop of 210 meters. Norway was the first course setter, and Italy was the second. It was nice sunny, -5 degrees, generally averaging, even on the second run, the 63 gates. Definitely the sets were very different from this one. I don't think this course is all that interesting, as we were talking about last week, how Levy is a more interesting course. I'm not gonna blow sunshine up this one and sit there and say, like, this is the funnest course I've ever seen. I think this is actually kind of a boring terrain course. It's just starts off a little bit more mellow. After about 12 seconds in, it dips into the steepest part of the course, and then it just mellows out. This is nothing to me that screams interesting. And that's where your course setters have to get a little more creative to challenge the athletes, and or not, depending on which run you're looking at.
Well, exactly, right? So yeah, the terrain is what the terrain is, so you got to make use of it. And obviously it's kind of a only one knoll kind of down to the front pitch, so you know, it's really kind of a basic set, really. And if you can get into the rhythm of, like, I know the second course, it was really offset down that middle compared to the first run, so the athletes have to get into the rhythm of whatever the course set is.
Yeah, I found the first course set to be, I mean, as we were talking last week, we don't want the blowout rate to be like super, super, super high, right? But at the same time, I found the set to be like a bit boring. And if it was really pilot error, if you screwed this one up, there was no big tricks or anything. And like either they were just running it too straight, or they got a little late, or they were just, you know, like too mentally, I guess, amped up or something. Something was wrong. And
so what the other issue with a pretty basic kind of set course or a basic terrain is that the brain has to stay engaged at all times. So if you make a mistake, it's actually harder to claw that time back, especially on this course when it's kind of flat at the bottom. You need to carry that speed off the bottom of that pitch onto those flats.
Yeah, and I did see quite a few people really lose it, and they jam the skis at the bottom of the pitch, try to take advantage of something, and then they lost all their speed for the bottom, and that's where they really lost the race. I mean, if you're going to make a mistake, make it at the top of the pitch so you can try to, like, guns out for the bottom. But I saw quite a few mistakes for that. Unfortunately, some of our Canadian gentlemen were those people.
It's just unfortunate, but little fact for you. Did you know that the Austrian skiers have failed to win any of the last 17 Men's World Cup slalom events.
I did. Yeah, the last one was Adelboden on January 9th, and the prior largest losing streak was 22 events from March 1984 to February 1986. And that is
that not crazy for Austrian?
Yeah, that's, I mean, well, as I was saying last week, and I was thinking that it was the men and the women, but I guess it was just the men that I was thinking of. Yeah. And that they've just been on that dry spell for quite some time. We all know how disappointing a dry spell is, Wendy, don't we?
Yes, Shelley, we do.
Thank you.
Yep. So I think the added pressure of racing in Austria, is that going to be good for those athletes or more difficult for those athletes?
We can't speak to the psychology of each individual athlete in that one. Some would be amped up and someone might get a little nervous. I mean, if you're a rookie, is that going to be super exciting or is that going to make you overstimulated and blow out? Like, that is where you get to know your athletes, and that's your sports psychologist's job of either amping them up or calming them down depending on what their performance zone is, right? And then these are the type of things that also, even as a coach without a sports psychologist, these are the things you kind of have to become a little bit of a sports psychologist. You learn that there are some athletes that you have to like really pump up and be like, go, go, go. And other ones that you're like, hey, just breathe.
Which one do you think I was?
Oh, man. We all know what you are.
Yeah. Most of our listeners can probably guess which way I went. But yeah, worked for me. So... Right. So about the race.
We obviously have our favorites. So we have Kristoffersen, who's obviously Norway. We have Daniel Juel. I think that with this, I think there was actually more nations in this than I thought. Like we had a largest British team, which we'll talk about, I think, later a little bit more, that I didn't expect. Like they're all in this year, 1996. The younger ones, obviously not riding, but like I thought that was a very interesting dynamic and something to really look out for. But we'll get into a little bit more of that later. Why do you think that more nations can get involved in slalom than in downhill? Because we always see more people from other smaller nations popping in and out of slalom, and it's easier. And why do you think that is?
I think part of the reason is training availability. So some of the smaller countries might not have those bigger hills. A lot of the teams obviously go and train in South America and Europe in the fall and winter and summer. And they don't have necessarily that access to some of the bigger, bigger training hills, perhaps. And you can kind of not get away with more, but you can be more specialized with the smaller countries to do more on the tech events than the speed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that... skiing downhill and super G is extremely cost prohibited. Like you have a lot of problems also with even safety setups. You have to have the staff to run that as well.
Absolutely.
So you have to be running in with a larger team. You have to be wheeling and dealing and so on. And that can be really hard. And also during your development years, where are you racing? Are you with an academy? Are you popping in there? Are you individually coached? How do you do that? Right? Because you need that time on task from a younger age in order to exceed, especially when you get to those higher speeds and how dangerous it is. You need that safety and you need that equipment all the time. And so I just kind of wanted to point out to our one listener out there that this is probably the reason why you see these smaller nations. And I mean, we've worked for the smaller nations and we've worked in the speed elements and in the tech elements, and the speed elements were always harder to organize. And we always had to, wheel and deal and make a lot of friends. And it was a lot of fun, but it was stressful to get those training days in that we needed in order to get the results we want and improvement, because you don't want to send your athlete into something and have them burn out. So it has to also mix in with your schedules as well. And that can be extremely different. There's more tech races that you can choose from than speed races. So again, like the calendar works against you at Europa Cup levels and FIS levels as well. When you are focused on both events with a small team, it's difficult.
Right. And the funding is not necessarily there with the smaller countries either.
No. It all relies on sponsorship. And a lot of the time, as we found out, it's about the goodwill of the other countries. When you are on the World Cup and the Europa Cup and higher levels of the FIS stage, it really is a bit of a family. The coaches really do support one another. And when you are respected as a coach and you know that they know that you're not a liability as a coach on the hill, and they get to know you and they know that you know your stuff, like you know your safety, you know your regulations, you work hard, you pitch in, they will there's not really any hesitancy. You'll be like, hey, are you doing any training? They'll be like, yay, no, let me check with, you know, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever. And it is a family out there. I mean, it's a single person event, but it's a team event, and it's more than just your own team. It's worldwide team working together.
Yeah. And all the staff are all mingling all the time. So all the staff, like, you know, each other. I mean, you stand side by side watching the TV while you're on the hill, especially in speed events with like the 7 second delays and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you're all crowded around there and you're all joking, especially if there's delay. It's a really interesting sport because as much as everybody has their competition and there's, you know, like it's got that competitive element. Everybody wants to win. Everybody's rooting for each other to have a safe and successful race.
That's right. Exactly.
Anyway, let's move on to the race itself, shall we?
Yes, right. Absolutely. Sure, I don't know where we went, but
I don't know.
Kind of sideways.
Digression is totally our shtick. So
our Canadian boys didn't have a great day.
No,
unfortunately.
They did not.
Our Alberta boy, Eric Reed, he didn't qualify for the second run. So had a few mistakes and didn't qualify. So that's too bad.
How did you find his skiing?
Not as fast as he should have been.
How did you find his style of skiing? Like, from a technical perspective, I have seen him ski better.
Well, I have as well. And maybe his capacity to engage in what the course is all about was missing a certain something. Maybe he wasn't quite focused in the same way that he usually is in his races, because we haven't seen him not qualify for a race for a long time.
Yeah, I found his skiing to be a little bit, I'm going to be a little meaner than you because you're always the nice person in this. Yeah, yeah, yes, I'm going to go a little bit more technical.
Good guy, bad guy.
Like, so he's usually better in the tech side because he has a really good ability to separate his upper and lower body. He wasn't doing that as much. He was dropping his hands. He was definitely a little more lackadaisical and not pressuring the ski at the top of the arc when he could have to accelerate down the hill. Instead, he was more just kind of going from gate to gate, from side to side. So that pressure at the top of the arc wasn't there as much in the places where he needed to accelerate. So maybe he was having an off day, or, you know, maybe he's been on the speed skis more and just hadn't been used to the disco sticks. I'm not really sure, right? So, but I'm saying that technically he could have been a little bit more solid, kind of an everything perspective. Like, even his line was just not as clean and as good as the other guys. And I mean, with your line comes your technique, so was one affecting the other, so on and so forth. Like, I'm not his coach, but
and it kind of poop falls downhill, and so do ski racers. So it's kind of like you maybe make an emotional mistake or a physical mistake, and it kind of gets a little bigger, and the outcome at the end is obviously a DNQ for Eric. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So
and we had a couple other young fellas out there racing on the slalom, Liam Wallace and Justin Elk here from. Well, both from Canada, obviously, but they both didn't finish. So too bad.
Mm-hmm. Happens good. I mean, some experience on the belt for those guys. So that's good. No one's ski racing. Maybe they'll have their day where they pop in. And also, I mean, those guys, I know that Reed is doing it all. So because he's doing speed and the other ones. I don't know if the other two guys are going to be in speed because we haven't seen any speed races yet. So
I guess
we'll find out in Beaver Creek.
So kind of a cool fact. So I don't know if I should give that away already, but probably everyone knows the answers already. But in third place was Michael Matt from Austria.
Yes.
Now, cool fact, his brother, Mario Matt, was on the podium as well in 2001, the last time there was an Austrian sweep. So anyway, really cool, though, because there was a sweep for Austria. We touched earlier on the last time Austria has been running not so great lately in the winning category. And boom, top three, all from Austria.
Stepping it up for sure. I mean, the first run, as we talked about, I didn't find it overly interesting. Did you find it to be the most interesting race? I didn't. But the second run, that was fun. And this was set by the Italian. And I have to say, the one thing that I did enjoy about this set was it came in with a double onto the pitch. And when you have when you have terrain like that, they had a double that speeds up the skiers right before you get to the steep part when you need to be really focusing on like taking a little bit more line and being a little more focused, having a little bit more direction with the skis. So he was purposely speeding these guys up to then have a very technical section
Yes. So, hey, I like that guy.
So I found that that was actually a really nice aspect to this set, which gave it a little more of a technical quality, because when you speed people up with that, especially in inspection, they have to take note that they have to have a little more direction and maybe ski that a little bit more differently than they would traditionally. If it were on the flat, they could take more risks, but because it's on a flat that goes to a pitch, they have to get their hips over their feet. They have to have that like that direction coming out of that double. So
do you think this might have been kind of a tactical ploy? Because I'm sure the Austrians, they knew the schedule ahead of time. I'm sure they were training there.
Oh yeah,
right, for sure they're training there. So do you think Mr. Italy there might have been going, huh, I know they've been training here, I'm gonna throw a little excitement in here?
I think a lot of coaches would do that anyway. I mean, the Italian coach is gonna know, and I mean, these guys at this level are aware that a lot of sets are kind of like this. They will speed them up before they come to this. They're the best in the world, they should be able to ski it, should quote unquote. I mean, obviously there's always intention behind every coach's set, and you and I both know this, but was it specifically for the Austrians? Maybe he didn't see that coming, because obviously the Austrians could ski it.
maybe he should have really put like inspection.
Maybe he should have thrown like a huge delay in there afterwards, or
something.
But the set again, like as you said, there was way more offset on the pitch, and then they came down and they had a couple of really good combinations. One being a flush that goes into a delay, and it was just a better flow, I found, of the course, and a little bit more challenging. So, and we definitely saw that with some of the skiers really struggling to keep their line, especially on that pitch.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. So in
I'm
second
glad
place,
you agree with that. Thank you.
I do. You're welcome.
It's like we both know what we're talking about. Imagine that.
Second, 0.23 behind the winner was Marco Schwartz. Mm-hmm. May the Schwartz be with you. I think I said that last year. And surprise, no surprise, Manuel Fowler.
And I don't really think that was a huge surprise for me. Like
the first run by almost point. Yeah. Well, he won by 0.94.
But he's not like, he's no rookie. He's been on the circuit for a very long time. I mean, this is a guy who's, I don't think that any of these are a surprise. I thought it was a surprise that it was a sweep.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Early in the season kind of thing. Well, I think maybe he's just taken advantage of the fact that this is the first ever slalom being held here at Gurgel. And it's the 24th venue from Austria to host a World Cup. That's a lot.
I mean, but Austria is the mecca of skiing. I don't find this to be particularly surprising.
It's so tiny. Austria.
You're tiny, but you got a lot going on.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, so that's he'd be very happy for this race to come back here next year, that's for sure.
Right.
That's cool. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, so I just want to talk about a couple of people, like Adrian Pertl. Let's talk about some of the guys who had a little bit more of an issue. Just ran it straight and blew a shoe, lost a ski. You know, these types of things happen. Taylor Laurie, let's talk about the beginning of his run. All green lights coming down. He was risking it for the biscuit.
He was so exciting to watch.
He was so aggressive, but his right-footed turns are stronger than his left-footed turns. And you can tell right off the hop that and at first I was kind of going like, is that a terrain thing? I was like, no, I think he actually just has a little bit of disparity between the two sides, which is typical. I mean, in ski racing, one side is going to be more than the other. But he had that green light all the way down. Such great angles on the ski. Really smooth. But his line was super risky. And that risk didn't pay off.
You got a 50-50 chance of that working for you.
Yeah. He totally. Yeah. So he blew out, which was unfortunate. Straddled, I think, wasn't it? Yeah. But that was exciting. And I think he's definitely one to watch. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about the British team for a second now.
Okay.
I know you're going to be super happy because you're somewhat British. I'm going to quote that in quotations.
I don't have the accent, but hey, have the passport. So, so the program has really come on strong this season. And there's a lot of chatter last year about the lack of funding for the British team. A lot of the money did not go to the Alpine sports. It went elsewhere. And that's even with the success of Dave Riding last year, podiuming.
Getting a podium. Winning.
So that was very disappointing for the British racers, because that money that they were hoping for because of the success of Dave, really, it didn't happen. So they've had to struggle and fight and do some fundraising on their own. And look at some of the results they're getting. I mean, they have, four in the World Cup? They had three in the top Well, three made the flip for the second run.
And I have to say, like, you have to look at always when you see a, like kind of like a cohort like this come into the fray, you mm-hmm. always have to look at the year, because usually these people have been in the same program and pushing each other as a team. And that tends to happen. And with someone like riding being more the senior aspect of the team, he's born in 86 and these guys are coming from 96. Right. So
right.
10 years is a large gap, and riding still being really at the top of his game. Like, he's skiing extremely well.
I mean,
you know, like, so he can mentor those and they can take kind of cues from that. I think that's fantastic. I actually really am excited for Great Britain this year. And I don't think I've ever said that in my life.
Like, well, Dave Riding, fourth place by 1/100th of a second.
Yep.
The dude is like 36, almost 37.
Yeah.
Right? He'll be 37, I think, in December.
Yeah, he's out of your dating pool.
It's amazing. Like, he's just on the right track. Yeah, he has a kid, and the motivation, though, is still there. And, you know, he can grow up with a very proud daughter. And he really would, I think, like to, well, everyone would like to get on the podium. But for him, he'd be the, if he can get on the podium in December or later, he'll be the oldest guy to podium.
Yep. And, you know, you look at the other two that popped in the top 30 there. You've got Billy Major, which I think is just a hilariously mm-hmm. British name.
Totally. Totally is. Yeah.
Yeah. It was 16th. So, yeah, he was 16th coming from bib 33. And when you have that popping in there, like, he obviously had the points, but, you know, like, to actually win that against or get into that top tier from 33rd for this World Cup is huge. And it's,
oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I would be ecstatic getting those World Cup points. You're going to have better starts in the future, you know, better hills. It's going to be, it's a huge accomplishment for these guys.
Oh, exactly.
So, and then as we talked about Taylor Lorry getting into the top 30 from 47th bib placement is massive. And I think that, again, like, there's one to watch. And I think that Britain should be an interesting dynamic going forward if they keep up this momentum.
Oh, exactly. Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very exciting to watch. And, you know, best wishes to all of them for the future. That's
best
for sure.
Wishes to all the, like, racers. I mean, come on.
All
you're
going to
do, like,
but,
Nancy,
you know,
Kerrigan, someone in the parking lot?
Nancy Kerrigan. Just call me Tanya.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So, we had a couple ones, and this is one of those courses. We had bib 50. From Austria, Dominic Rechner. And sometimes I wonder if that's because they knew the terrain a little bit better because they're from there, so they've probably raced there more. But,
well, for sure. Mm-hmm. Right. And but he has been on the podium before. Did you know that?
No.
He podiumed in the parallel. You know how I feel about that.
Oh,
event.
Yeah. Well, we in, both feel the same way about the parallel.
In November of 2001.
You know what? We're going to say controversial things about the parallel. You cannot write us at whatever address we have listed.
Matter. They're not having it this year. So we're fine.
I know, because we were right.
We were right. Yes, we were. So he had already podiumed. So he's gotten a taste of that podium. And wasn't he my attack from the back the other day as well, last week?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, both days. So, yeah, he's got a bright future ahead if he keeps this up.
Yep. We still see, like, Popov is still here from Bulgaria. Like, he's still in that.
Always
top
love
15.
Him.
Yep. Well, I mean, should we talk about the controversy that happened at this race?
Okay. So, yeah, we talked about the finishers, right? Unfortunately, we had, they had a little bit of a break. There's about a 10, 15 minute break between unplanned fifth last person to up to the fastest athlete. And it was a climate activist. They don't want to call it a protest. They just call it activists.
Activism?
So they're with some. I'm going to say
active activism?
An active activism. I don't want to give them any street cred here, but I'm going to say their name really quietly, but because I don't want them to get the attention that they want. They're
just
called
don't
the last generation. Last generation movement, but don't tell anyone. And this wasn't their first protest at a World Cup. They had also protested earlier in October and sat down on the road and blocked the road so the buses can get through, the fans can get through, and they blocked the road for about 15 minutes.
So this is unsurprising. And in the world that we live in today, this is going to be something that's going to be propping up. This is an incredibly traditional and conservative organization. So they're not going to be talking about this. They go hush hush because they don't want to have to deal with it. And they think that the recognition will just cause further problems, which is, I mean, that's their choice as an organization and so on. But it doesn't mean that we can't because we have nothing to do with this.
Well, that's so, right. They are against governmental subsidies for fossil fuels. Right. That's what they were trying to draw attention to.
So, right. And I mean, pretty much every government does this. But I mean, like, I'm not going to go into the politics because that's a totally different podcast. But I think that in the future, I mean, there have been protests for, you know, arts plays and art galleries and all of these other things. And this is not going to be something that stopped. It is an important topic. I think it's a topic that's extremely relevant, whether you agree or disagree with the way by which these people are doing it. And you think that it's accomplishing any means or goals is something to be debated on your own. But the fact of the matter is that in the future, if these types of delays happen, it should come as no surprise. Like it is just part of our global political scene these days. And there's nothing I see is going to be changing that anytime soon.
Well, one issue I had is with the security. So this fella was just standing at the bottom in the group. He was standing towards the finish line and there was a little opening in the fence and he simply ran through it, shook his little powdered bag to spread the powder all over the finish line. And it was easy. And it took people, I think, a second to go, what is going on here? Like the athlete who had come down, I think it was Marco Schwartz, the TV was on him. No one really noticed what was going on for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And then a couple more came out.
Well, definitely. I'm sure that security will be tightened up anyhow. But Kristofferson definitely had an issue with it as he was throwing snowballs at the protesters. And we all know Kristofferson's he's a passionate dude. You got to give him that. But definitely he was wanting to have a couple of words and maybe more than words with a couple of the protesters as he got kind of escorted back to the athlete zone.
He did, security. And good thing he was escorted back. But I understand his frustration because this is their livelihood that they're doing. This is their job. It's not like it's a training day. This is their job, and they're out to win. And it affected, in my opinion, it affected the last five athletes that went down. Four out of the five all had issues.
Yeah, and so Kristofferson, I'm going to say he told NRK, which is Norway's national broadcaster, it's so disrespectful. Say what you want, vote, and try to change things from there. But don't ruin it for people. It's completely disgusting.
Yeah.
So that's his quote from, and I mean, that's his opinion. And as we said, but anyway, the rest of the race went off. And as we saw, then the racers also, you don't know if the snow is going to change in that particular 15-minute window or what happened, or it's just
even
messing
on TV,
up their focus.
Even on the TV, you could see it was I'm going to say a 10 to 15 minute break. That's quite a while. So the snow conditions changed a little bit. To me, it looked like the clouds came in a little bit. Maybe the light was just a little bit flatter for those last five. I mean, part of ski racing is dealing. We always hurry up and wait, right? We know that. But it's how you approach it. It's the mental game at that point. Physically, you're ready to go. But the mental game, okay, it's not like, I mean, we've seen gates on the course. We have seen dogs on the course. We have seen moose on the course. We have seen course workers on the course.
But broken drones on the course.
Drones. Oh my God. Yeah. Very close up and personal. But we haven't had anyone do this in the finish line before. So obviously they can't continue with their lane in there. They were dragged out, literally dragged out by the police.
Yeah. So. I mean, that is their job though. I mean, they are interrupting and I would like to kind of just remind people, we don't know where these people are from. We don't know if it was an international crew or if they were Austrian or so on and so forth. But if you're planning on being a part of these types of events, be very careful about the internationality of it and where your passport is from and what the laws are in the country that you plan on doing this in, because I don't know what Austrian law is, but
that was very very interesting part of the race.
Yes, that was very much brushed over. I am going to go on a happy note and just to say that when Eric Reed did come down, just on a completely different note, the announcer in the background is like, "Nice to see you again," to the very likable Eric Reed.
Oh, well, that made his day, I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, so at least we got something out of it.
Right. Yay, Canada. So I'm sure they'll regroup and come back together again. But the men now go off to Beaver Creek. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And where are the ladies going? Does I Solden?
What?
Where
we just went, we were just at, we went to Solden day one.
Yeah, I'm having a water, not a coffee.
the ladies are going to be in Killington.
Oh yeah, duh. Yeah.
and then after that they're in Tromelow.
Yes, yes they are. Yeah, good. Well, there's lots of snow in Killington. I saw them making snow and getting the track ready, so should be good to go. Right on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to North America we go. And I don't really have much to report on except for, as we know from the tuning room, thank you very much to Freshwater Distillery and to Vocal Marker Del Bello for helping support this lovely podcast that we do. And yeah, we'll see you later. Is that all you have? Because that's all I have.
That's all I got till next week.
All right. Well, next week we are in the United States of America, home of the brave.
Isn't it home of the free and the brave? Or is that Canada?
No. Where, I don't know. We'll have to
sing the anthem.
I'm sure we'll hear about it. Anyway, next week, I've been Shelley.
And I've been Wendy.
Keep your tips up.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Why is it that you never, ever give the same amount of technical knowledge? I can see your brain. You're thinking the same thing that I'm thinking. You know that Eric Reed did not ski that well, and you know why. Why am I the one who's like the bad chick who's always the one pointing out the technical? Because your face is like basically like, yep, you're right, I understand. And then you're like, oh, but you know, he's so nice.
The announcer agreed with me. What can I say? You know what? You're really good at the technical, right? So you do I can do more of the technical. Maybe I'll pick another racer. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like just pick one or two that are like, maybe, you know, like to kind of pick on here and there. Cause people are wanting that type of information, but it's like,
absolutely.
I'm like, you do know exactly what I'm talking. Like his fucking arms were like everywhere. And it's like way behind. He's like in the backseat for like half. He comes onto the bottom of the pitch, loses all his fucking speed. And he's just like, he's sucking balls compared to how he normally skis. Like if he came down.
A little ragged.
Yeah, like just like way loosey-goosey, not like tight and like the line. Like definitely we have seen him ski better. And I'm not trying to rip him to pieces, but at the same time, I'm like, dude, like, you know, you paid for the whole ski, use the whole ski.
Like he literally paid for the whole ski.
Exactly.
But even Manny Feller's body positioning. Right?
Yeah,
like the four who had an issue, they were not in good body positions. They were all over the place.
Oh,
but
no.
He came down and he was dull. And I was like, is it because the other, and I should have said this on the podcast, but is it because now they're in the rhythm? So the guy who went fifth and then, well, whatever, 25th and then 26th, 27th. So they had that long break. Yeah. And then did they have to gradually get into it? And by the time Manny, I'm calling him
they
Manny.
They kind of got their game face back on.
Yeah. And in the rhythm and the flow of the race, right?
Yeah.
So, but he's also professionally won by 0.94 the first run. So he had some field to play with, you know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think that when we're looking at these things, like we have to be really cognizant of the fact that this is an audio thing. So we have to actually explain what these people are doing.
Don't want to put it on YouTube, or is it an audio on YouTube?
Well, we'll do the YouTube eventually. And actually I'm recording our conversation right now, so we can just add this as a bonus at the end.
Yeah.
Because we're also swearing a lot. I mean, we didn't warn them balls. That we're swearing now.
I did not say that.
So, but I mean, yeah, like I just found that with some of the skiers, like definitely when they came onto that pitch, like they were a little bit out of control. And then the one thing that I really, as I said before, like Lori Taylor skiing, he was getting some awesome angles, really smooth on the ski. And I'm wondering if it's because he's a little younger that maybe he just, in experience, kind of lost the plot a little bit, or maybe a little too aggressive. But definitely, I want to.
Well, maybe a little bit too, but you either are or you're not.
Well, I'm also really curious because I want to see him ski more, because I want to know if that right foot, maybe it's a disparity because of something being stiff, or, you know, like something, you know, like, yeah, just, or if that's actually just how he skis. And I'm like, honestly, like when you see only two runs, you're not really getting the full experience. Yeah. So, I mean, I can say that next time maybe he fixes his left foot, I guess.
And maybe there was a knee injury. Maybe there's a back, you know, in the past. Like,
yeah,
for me, my two turns were totally different and I had to live with it, because when I was 10, there was an accident and my Achilles tendon shortened. So I don't have the full flex.
Yeah.
Right? Well, so I can't even bend the leg forward.
Well, I mean, my left knee has bursitis and ACL, yeah, MCL, and what was it? A meniscus tear. So I had surgery, yeah, on that one. And that's actually my stronger leg now, because I did so much strengthening on it.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm out of balance, it hurts.
Oh, so we could fix the other one for you if you'd really
so
like.
So now when I ski, you'll notice my left-footed turns are stronger than my right. So like, and it's, everybody's like, oh, you're a little out. So now like I really focus on my right-footed turns, but my I am not an ambi-turner, as Zoolander would say. That's a nice blue steel face. Nice blue steel face.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess this is the bonus content, because that's, I'm calling you out, Wendy, to do more of your fucking job.
Fine. I will add more technical details.
Thank you.
Is that good?
Yes.
Okay.
This conversation's over.
Okay, girl.